Hey guys, what's up? It's Nifty Q. Welcome back to another episode of the Wild Wild Web, where I look to explore the digital frontier through in-depth discussions with Web3 industry pioneers. Now today I'm sitting with Star Lordi, CEO of OniForce, to discuss the state of one of the most exciting PFP projects in the industry currently. Topics we touch on include how OniForce was saved from collapse by a buyout and change of leadership, what should collections think about before launching a second or third mint, and their announcements coming at Comic-Con San Diego next week. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Star Lordi, and please remember, nothing you hear on this podcast should be construed as financial or legal advice. That's our vibe, our tribe. The man, the myth, the legend, Star Lordi, here on the Wild Wild Web pod. Excited to have you in, man. I feel like in that pre-episode talk there, I was getting interviewed by you. So I'm glad that the tables are turned now. I get to sit here and talk with you. Yeah, you get to experience that for the next 45 minutes.
Nice.
How's it going?
Great. Very happy to be here. Definitely excited for this one. So thanks for having me.
Amazing, man. Yeah, it's interesting because I do a ton of these interviews and have over the years. And there have only been a certain amount of interviews that I've gone in and really felt like, ooh, I need to get this one right. And because of, you know, where you guys are at in your timeline, I want to, you know, really kind of unpack a bunch of things. One, how you got to this point where, you know, the IP, the community, the core team all seems to be aligned in a certain way where you can enter that, in my opinion, that blue chip category very, very quickly here. And so I felt like I needed to get it right. I don't know. Do you feel like that as a founder sometimes? Do you feel like, hey, I think I have to get it right
everywhere I go. I think it's a funny question because I did think about that, how like when I was just the project manager before the acquisition, it's like nobody cared about us. So whatever I did was like kind of in a vacuum. And then there was a transition period in the first month or two where I realized like, oh, I'm like becoming a public figure now, like people actually care what I have to say, and it like impacts the project. And you know, before I could say all sorts of like random ideas and nobody would care if it happened or not, you know. And now it's like if I say something, everything is alpha, or all of a sudden it becomes like, you know, speculation. I'm like, ugh.
Do you feel like you guys are on that cusp as well, or is it just me?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing that from the outside.
I don't know, we're as well. 100%. Yeah. I think before the acquisition, or I would say like in the beginning of when the acquisition was happening, it's kind of like there was a lot of energy and people being curious about us. Like a lot of people who gave up Oni for dead, like were like, wait a second, like the founders are gone. Like, okay, maybe this thing could be something special again. You know, people who knew the original history, because it was like one of the original blue chips initially, you know? And so, like, I would say we were outside of top 10 before, you know, like in terms of by conversation, if, you know, not by floor price, but just in terms of like, what are the blue chips out there that are still like going and trying, you know, like, and just in the 4 months or 5 months since then, I would say we're like in the top 5 conversation now, because it's like so many projects have, and people will be like, oh, you flipped this project, you flipped that project. I'm like,
yeah.
I think they flipped themselves, because we didn't really do anything, you know, like it's almost like we didn't screw up, so that by default we're like rising. But because of the past history and the credibility and the recognition of being like the first anime project, you know, first one of the last blue chips from 2021 to like kind of have a chance to like rise again, that sort of thing, because Pudgy already had their rise, you know. I think Pudgy led the way, you know. But so yeah, I agree. Like it is a responsibility that I had to come to terms with, is like, you know, before it's like I only had to make the community happy, which was like something that I focus on a lot, and that is easier for me. And then now it's like I have to make the market happy, which is like a totally different ball game, you know.
I love how I was getting, again, the hot seat treatment prior to the episode, but
yeah.
Now we can talk about your psychology, right? Of
yes.
has this swap to CEO and kind of the front facing point in this collection and this IP, has that changed how you act IRL in the meat space?
You know, not really. I'm a pretty down to earth person, and actually I have led, I mean, I've been in the the forefront of like multiple projects and communities in the past. So actually I'm okay with it. It is a little unnerving when people know who you are before you know who they are, because I never ever cared about the spotlight. I never wanted to be like famous. I think there were just different times in my life where it just like started happening. And then with here, it's like on a whole different level. And, you know, like I was at VCon, and I was with a friend who's not even into NFTs, right? Like he's just starting to get into it, but he was there for a different reason. And then he was like inviting a friend over who I didn't know. And this guy, you know, was connected through like pickleball, which has nothing to do with NFTs, right? And so, but this guy walks up to me, and then the first thing he says is like, "Oh, so you're the guy with the secret sauce." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "Oni Force." And I was like, "Whoa, Oni Force." I was like, "Oh shoot, like you know about Oni." And so he was like an early holder, and so he kind of watched from the sidelines of like the whole like down and up, and so it was just kind of a surreal feeling when you realize like, oh, okay, there's people out there like talking about you, judging you, like, you know, it's been all positive though. And people are, I mean, luckily, you know, people are rooting for us. So it's not quite the same as like, if, I don't know, if you're like a controversial figure and there's like people hating on you all the time, but for me, since I like being low key, you know, like it is a little, odd.
Well, that was an odd comment, to be fair, although positive. So I'm sure, you're, like you said, you're getting more of that. For the uninitiated into Oni Force, I do want to get into kind of the backstory.
I should go
there.
Rewind.
We'll rewind. But within that conversation we were just having, you touched on Blue Chip. I mentioned, you know, my co-founder, Gift Dead, mm-hmm. here, and we host daily shows. And the topic of Blue Chips comes up a lot. And it's a funny term, because some people don't even think that Blue chips should be associated with any NFTs. I'm interested, like, you know, we look at blue chips and you think, oh, maybe it's just floor price, right? And that gets brought up a lot, but there's probably a little bit more to unpack there. What's your thoughts on blue chip? I mean, you guys again are on that cusp, maybe have been in the past. In my opinion, you have. What's your opinion on that term, blue chip?
It's a great question, because I also agree that, like, historically the term blue chip is for bestowed upon a company like after they've established some sort of like continuity, right? Like you could say Ford or GM or, you know, Apple or whatever. It's like they've had like, you know, many, many, many years to show that they have staying power. I think because our ecosystem is so fragile, like even the biggest project could go to zero like in one day if the wrong things happen, that it's hard to call them blue chips. So it's kind of like we have short memories anyways, and everything happens so fast. So if like a year is like 10 years in Web3, that kind of makes you a blue chip if you made it through the year. But I do think it is premature, and I only use it in the sense that if you're going to call Pudgy or, you know, Bored Apes or, you know, whatever project from 2021 a blue chip, then by default we're a blue chip too, because we did like 140 million in trade volume in the first 60 days. Like we were one of the top projects, you know, at that time. And literally we were being called the blue chip immediately right after launch, which I think, though, to answer your question, now I look at it more like cultural relevance on top of like floor price is such like a weird thing to peg the value of your company on, because like we Oni Force as an IP always had the same value and potential value, and now it's starting to show because of the overall sentiment. So I kind of think of it like the way we look at blue chips and NFTs is like, what is the cultural relevance? Like how much of like the public conversation and kind of like mind share do you own in the space? And then yeah, like floor price and volume could be part of that as well. So I'd say we're back in the conversation for it, but we still have a lot of work to do before people will like really consider us like on the same level as like a Bored Apes or I don't know, D-Gods or you know, Pudgy, that sort of thing.
I loved your tweet about shipping product for speculation. And it does feel like in 23, we have gotten to the point where NFT projects that want to be considered blue chips, besides like the ones that are associated with art, I think like something like CryptoPunks, like you do have to, you know, ship a product. Now it could go in the route of Azuki and you could like, totally flat it, you know, flat on your face. But I think a lot more in 21 were just based on speculation, and that's it.
I agree with that. I think as a space, we're maturing. I mean, to remember in the early, in 2021, it's just all DJs up in there, right? Like the stuff, the way you're looking at it is like the vast majority of people who are playing with crypto money have never had to analyze a business P&L or like understand what like their balance sheet might, how that might affect their business or what partners, like what are the things they're doing that actually signals like, hey, they have the right team on board. And you know, so it was all just hype. It was just straight up marketing hype. And let's face it, people were printing money with Fiverr art. I mean, that's just like crazy, you know, like even when that was happening, I was like, yo, this is nonsense. Like there's no other industry in the world where you could ship such a shitty, vague, ambiguous product and then make millions of dollars, right? Like, could you imagine if you walked into a Safeway and there's like some like product with a label that was made with like a Fiverr artist and a Fiverr graphic designer, and then like on the back they're like, well, ingredients may or may not exist, might be poisonous for you, hard to say, we might also just rug this company because we're all anonymous. Like there's like like you, that wouldn't fly in the real world. Like the average consumer would be like, I'm not buying this, I don't get it. That's why the average consumer does like blue chip brands. They like that label to say a name that they understand has value. You know, like there's a reason why a Honda has more resale value than, you know, a Ford or something, right? Because they've established that history through their execution. So now, yeah, you have to ship product because it is still much, very much a mindshare kind of attention economy. However, if you're going to make your community happy, you have to ship product. You have to make sure that it prioritizes them, that it delivers something that they feel is value. Like that value, unfortunately, a lot of it right now is like, do their bags go up? But there are other intangibles, like how strong is your community? How do you feel like with the people you connect with? Like I've always said, fun is a utility. Look at 10KTF, like people, none of their holders care about the floor price. Like their topic of conversation is just always like, oh, what's going to happen in this next part of the story? You know, so they've really made engagement a utility in a lot of ways. Now, maybe for traders, they don't like that as much because they do care about floor price and things. But I think NFTs need to diversify more and move out of just the collectible, like kind of speculative market into like things that either like solve problems for people or like actually enhance their lives somehow. Yeah.
So before we go any further, let's get into your backstory. Let's kind of like some foundation of like, who were you before even Star-Lordy? Like, what were you doing? Were you, I'm assuming that's not your given name. So
unfortunately not. Little, I'm
let's get into your background as well as telling a little bit of that story of Oni Force for the uninitiated.
Sure. Yeah. Basically, you know, in terms of my personal backstory, I think for what's relevant to Oni Force, you could really start all the way back to childhood, which is that I, as a kid, you know, my first dream was actually to be a comic book artist. And that's all I wanted to be. I just love comic books. I am a huge, you know, Marvel nerd, and later DC I started liking more, but, you know, I love drawing. I love storytelling. Somewhere like in middle school, I fell in love with filmmaking. And then literally like for the next 15 years or something, all I did was dream of being like a big time filmmaker and was just always working on that. And then ended up starting my own production company and started doing like a lot of like corporate work. So I was doing, I actually started as a wedding videographer when I was like 19, but I ended up going into corporate stuff. And because I'm based in San Francisco, I had a lot of tech clients. So I kind of was lucky enough to work with like Google and Facebook and Mozilla and like, you know, eventually hundreds of startups. Like I just have a lot of experience in the tech industry and understanding how they work, the industry works. And also like being in the room and like seeing an inside like of like the people actually like building the future, right? Like the people having conversations about social media and VR and all this stuff, and like really seeing like how the sausage was made. And since, you know, in that industry they are not very media savvy or not very artistic, like I kind of created this niche for myself where I was at the intersection of like technology and storytelling, you know, where I really understood technology really well, but also am a storyteller and artist. So I also understand like what actually moves people, what builds communities, like. And then on top of that, I started an art blog with a group of friends in 2009, where it ended up being like one of the top three art blogs in the world. Like we were getting like the first year we had like 1.8 million unique visitors. And then like eventually, like, you know, within a couple of years, we had like 30 volunteers around the world working for free. We're doing art shows at like Basel and South by Southwest. And we're on track for like 5 million unique visitors a year. And, you know, this is all like 100% organic. And so we really became champions for artists, you know, like we helped develop a lot of artists, you know, find them and then develop their careers and get them exposure. And, you know, I got very disenfranchised with the art world itself, cause I discovered it's like very, very political and like the way that it's gatekept. And then, so we kind of disbanded, cause also we were just like a group of friends that had our own like dreams, you know, like filmmaking, design, all that stuff. But the reason why I tell you all these things is that, you know, I ran my production company for a while. I was doing TV commercials, was never happy with it. When the pandemic hit, I kind of hit the reset button. I went like full on nerd again. You know, I was just hardcore going into comics and anime and manga and just like losing myself in that and reading a bunch of sci-fi, et cetera. And then when NFTs came along, when I learned how smart contracts work, that was like, that was the thing that got me. Actually, I didn't care about the money or the speculation or flipping. I thought it was kind of nonsense. Like, you know, I just, when I realized like, oh, like the smart contracts, like that's how you can protect artists. Like that's what got me in. And so I was like, the thing that we've been waiting for the whole time that when we're running that art site is finally here, you know? And so, you know, especially for digital artists, you know,
you mentioned your love of filmmaking. I'm interested in like what stories you like to tell and in what format you like to tell them, kind of.
As a filmmaker, I've always loved more like art house, indie, like European, Asian films, or just like actual cinema, you know, like Scorsese is cinema, right? You know, that sort of stuff. Like, and so I've always been in a narrative, and particularly I think I like things that create emotions. And then I've done a bunch of documentary work too. I do care about like social issues and just understanding the human condition. You know?
You mentioned the art scene and kind of getting fed up with how it's run and in the process and how political it is. Does that carry over to the NFT art scene? Because that, you know, that's, I'm much more of a gamer. I'm much more of a collector. I you know, rub shoulders with people who do the NFT art scene and all these things, but does that carry over from someone with your experience in the traditional art space?
There's some carryover. I think by nature, like if you have a platform, then you start controlling, you have an influence in the narrative. You can control like the way that people enter or the way that artists are perceived, you know, like, but because of the just ethos of decentralization, it's also like takes what social media started to like the next degree, which is like, if you are an artist and people love your art and you have your own platform, you now have more tools to like create more experiences and more loyalty and revenue and protect yourself in a lot of ways. So I still think it's a much better place to be a fine artist in Web3. And I think in general, especially at this time, people are much more loving. And like, if you're in it, especially as an artist, you probably like, and you're still here, then that means you like really believe in it. And so, yeah.
So where did Starlordy come into this equation? Was it like pre-NFTs or was that something you found though when you got it to Web3?
That was a Web3 thing. You know what's funny is that people think that it's because of like Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's actually not. Like
that didn't cross my mind at all, actually.
Okay, I get that. That's cool, yeah. Some people think it is, but there might be some parallel-ish, I guess. Like, he's kind of goofy and I'm kind of goofy, but really, like, it was kind of a joke, because this also, by the way, is embarrassing. It shows how green I was, because when I was, like, signing up for Discord, and I was like, oh, I need, like, a username, and so I was like, oh, I'll just do, like, this is, like, before joining OniForce, you know, and I didn't know what I was getting into. So it's kind of, like, star, like, I thought, like, oh, like, I want to be, like, kind of, like, a light or something positive, and then Lordy, because like I was like, oh Lordy, like what am I getting into kind of thing. Like it was just kind of like my own joke, and like literally when I typed it in, I thought like, oh, I'll just change it like whenever I figure out what username I really want. And then once I went in, I realized like, oh, I'm not allowed to change it now. This is my identity.
Yeah, now you can't leave.
I don't get to leave, and I don't get to change my name because, yeah, I found out there was some history back with OniForce of like kind of having a founder do like two different like characters that wasn't like too well received, and
yeah,
things like that.
I want to get into the backstory with OniForce here, but just like staying with you in that timeline with NFTs, what were some of those initial collections, whether they be an art or PFPs, that drew you in, and maybe the first that you encountered that drew you in, but then also once you kind of dove into the ecosystem, which ones did you find that really stuck with you?
You know, honestly, OniForce was the first project that made me appreciate art in PFP collections. I think Bored Apes actually has aged really well, and now I consider that art pretty iconic. You know what I mean? I think that art is actually perfect because there's like an infinite number of ways you could have drawn a monkey, right? But the way they did it like was actually perfect for what is needed. But at the time, I thought, okay, especially with all the fiber art that was coming, I was like, what is this shit? I just, you know, I'm like coming from like the actual art world where I'm working with like artists that are like in the MoMA, or like they, you know, their paintings are like $100,000 or something. And it's like, you have to be like an artist that spends like 20 years of your life or more just to get to that status. And so like coming into this space and seeing people print money on fiber art was like, like it's like a slap in the face, you know. And so honestly, I didn't like almost any project. Not that I was like against them, it's just I just wasn't interested. And so I was more interested in understanding, like, you know, talking to the G Monies or the Snowfros of the world and trying to understand like, okay, like why is this generative art more valuable than that, or like why do people think this is like, you know, etc. And so I started off like exploring that, but honestly, OniForce was the first one. When I saw the art, I immediately loved it. Where I was like, oh, I was like, okay, PFPs could actually be dope. Like, this is, to me, OniForce was the high art PFP project, which I did find out later that was the intention, you know, it was supposed to be an art project. And so I didn't have too much exposure to other projects than that. Maybe like After Order, which is a cool project by this artist Ramon that we're actually working with right now, which is cool. It's kind of like a card game thing. And then, you know, there was a bunch of projects actually I probably would have tried getting into, except to be honest, by the time I discovered them, the floor prices were already like insane. So I was like,
yeah,
I'm from the outside looking in.
I almost want to say, like, how could you, if you're in the NFT space, not know about OniForce? But I don't want to be that exclusionary, because there's a lot of projects in NFTs. Like I hear about projects on Solana, on Arbitrum, on Ethereum that I don't even know about. So for those people that don't know about OniForce and this like rich and kind of up and down history, kind of give us a TLDR and let's dive in.
Absolutely. So OniForce is the first anime PFP project. It's the first sideways PFP project. Apparently it's the first left facing PFP as well. And then, yeah, some holder told me that. And then on top of that, the founders, especially the developer Crypto Spaces, they actually created the whitelist, which is now known as the allow list, which, you know, so OniForce it minted in August 2021, right after Bored Apes. And it was an original blue chip just by the fact that it shot up to a 70th floor like immediately and had a lot of celebrity owners from Gary Vee to Snoop Dogg to Steve Aoki, like that sort of stuff. But unfortunately, because the original founders as a group were not really prepared or experienced to handle like a success of that level and also a global brand, you know, it quickly fell. By the time I came in early 2022, it had just gone from 70 to 0.2. You could imagine how gnarly that was in the community and how much trust was broken for that to fall so quickly. But that turned into silver lining because, you know, about a year later, we managed to sell the company and exit all the founders, brought on really great new ownership, And now we get to live the dream and like kind of go back to like achieving what we set out for the community, which is to basically just be like the greatest anime project to be birthed out of Web3 and try to like actually translate into the real world. Yeah,
I'm really focused in on how you guys tell a story. Obviously, like I do want to get to that. But it, while we're still in this timeline of you guys maybe selling, you mentioned you guys sold the company. I'm just interested in these details. A new ownership came in, inputted you as CEO. And what was your role in the company prior to that? I kind of just want to unpack that.
So when I was brought on early 2022, I was actually, I initially just volunteered because I heard there was some problems behind the scenes. I wasn't really clued in on the drama. I initially, when I had lunch with, I think it was JR and William, my friend William Tong, you know, I just offered casually. I was like, oh, if you guys need help, let me know. And then the next day, William calls me and is like, hey, can you actually be the project manager? And I was like, wow, that sounds like a cool opportunity because, like, I really genuinely love the art. I thought it was my favorite art PFP, and it's a, still had a brand name to it. So in terms of building my career, I'm like, yeah, sure. And but I didn't know what a crazy mess it was. And after the first... after the first 2 weeks of working like literally 100 hours a week, I was like, oh, actually, I think I need to get paid for this, guys. Like, I don't think this is like a volunteer position, you know? Like,
and you were volunteer project manager?
I was a volunteer project manager for the first 2 weeks. Again, I was very green. I had no idea what that really meant in Web3. So I had a pretty steep learning curve. But then for a year I was a project manager, and then crazy, believe it or not, they never incorporated their company. So we had to incorporate like almost like a year later. And, so I, by default, I ended up becoming CEO.
How much did Oni Force raise in their mint and they didn't incorporate?
Dude, like over $10 million, dude.
That's a great crypto story. That is so degen.
Only in crypto, bro. Could you imagine that? You make over $10 million essentially overnight, and then you have like hundreds of thousands of dollars in royalties coming in every month, and you literally have no company to even like manage it. Wow. Like, it's the most degen thing you could like possibly imagine, you know?
Okay, so when you guys incorporated, then you transitioned to the CEO role? Okay.
Yeah. And then I decided to stay on with the new ownership.
Got it. Okay. I really am fascinated in this idea that like DAOs or protocols can like acquire other DAOs and protocols. Like NFT projects is another example. Maybe this isn't, you know, the exact parallel to that, but do you think this will happen more, or do you think this is kind of an outlier situation where one team that essentially launched the project can't really get it to where it needs to go? And so another team either acquires or, you know, buys out that current IP. You kind of get where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do think we're headed that way. I think just as a group, we're pretty excited by what Web3 brings in terms of DAOs and, you know, just the idea of decentralized everything or giving more power to people. So, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more of it. And what I'm hoping is that we start teaching other Web2 companies how to incorporate that into their business model, you know?
I'd love to kind of dive into the lore behind Oni Force and kind of just breaking down what the ecosystem looks like today. So what do you guys have going on, and kind of what is that lore foundation that you guys build off from?
Got it. Yeah, so we were the first project to actually have a real lore and storytelling aspect to a 10K set, you know, in terms of like there was like a story that initial community and the mods and stuff were writing like tons of lore and developing the characters. So you could kind of think of ourselves as like a Star Wars universe. If Star Wars was more like Blade Runner meets Naruto or something, right? Like it's kind of like it's sci-fi, but it's kind of punk and it's kind of like fantasy too, right? So it's like you would have characters that might have like energy attacks or things like Dragon Ball or mystical things. So it's not quite as like Western as Blade Runner. And so that's kind of the universe we live in. The initial collection, the Genesis, was 7,777 characters that live in the Enclave, which is our name for kind of the whole area that they live in, which you could imagine like almost like a Manhattan or a Neo Tokyo or something like that. And so those Genesis characters represent like the core types of characters, but there's a much bigger, rich world that we're building out in terms of like explaining different social classes, going beyond the walls of the Enclave, where it's kind of like the Enclave is, I would say it'd be more like a Hong Kong or something, right? Where it's like kind of its own like territory. And then as we expose more of the world, you'll realize like, oh, there's like Avatar, there's different permutations of Oni in different, you know, that originated from different geographies that have different, you know, cultures and physical attributes. And then there's like all these other creatures and beings that live in the world, just like in Star Wars. So you'll have like from androids to monsters to demons, that sort of stuff. So it's a really rich world that's very unique.
One of the most dynamic things I think with NFTs, specifically PFPs, is how you continue to build out that story, maybe launch other collections that do tell that story, but also appease your current holder base. And like, it's such a dynamic and complex situation that some NFT projects don't even do it.
Right.
Oni Force is one of the most prominent collections that doesn't have a secondary mint, yep, or anything like that. How do you kind of look at that situation where, okay, we need to continue to tell our story. We potentially need to get more folks in at like not a one ETH price. That's still like pretty expensive for a lot of people. How are you breaking down that combo within your kind of organization?
That's a great question. And that's actually one of the most important things for us to figure out, because like you said, we never diluted. I think actually in hindsight, one of the benefits of failing early and failing small is that we actually didn't make any of the mistakes that these other projects have. And honestly, we probably would have. Like, if we were just still going full tilt boogie, it would be like, okay, time for a second collection, time for a token, time for a metaverse, you know, like all this nonsense that, like, you know, we wouldn't even know what that means at the time. And we're just doing what everybody else is doing. So now we have this luxury where it's like, oh, we could actually see every move that people have made. And even like Azuki recently, like that was the big one. I think everybody was waiting for to see how that would impact the market, and you know, obviously it was historic what happened in a not good way, but we learned a lot from that. And actually I will say Azuki did certain things right. Like I think their Bobu and their beans are actually amazing ways to get people into their ecosystem, which didn't really dilute the value of the original in any way. So I think it's about the expectations you set up. For sure, if you drop a 20k collection, PFP collection, you are now entering into the, you know, diluting, like what happens. Yeah, like that's very tricky, but we're far from that.
Yeah, if you had a magic wand, you became, and I know you already got enough work on your hands with Oni Force, but I'm okay. Just saying, in this hypothetical universe where you become the CEO of Azuki, what would you do? What's the one thing you would do there? After already this missing,
I mean, first of all, I wouldn't charge 2E. I mean, like, in this market, I don't know how you could analyze this market and say it's okay to take out $40 million of liquidity out of like your own community's hands without like any actual way of like creating more demand to onboard more people, so that way the price doesn't go down, you know, like. And I'm just speculating. I'm guessing, obviously, it's not like I don't think anybody in Azuki was planning on this to happen, right? It's not like they're sitting, I'm hoping, and I'm imagining, it's not like they're sitting in some room like, oh, we're going to get $40 million out of our community. Like, it's more like, my guess is that it was like, yo, our floor is like 15. 2 is like a very fair price for like entry into the collection. And because of like our like kind of blue chip status and value and all this stuff, like, the price will probably go up, is I'm guessing what they thought, right? Because like I'm assuming, you know, if everybody has good intentions. However, if you're saying to people that you want more people to enter the ecosystem, like 2 ETH is not the price point that you do that. You know what I mean? Like, and also, I think their challenge is like, they probably, if imagine if they had only sold to the public, then the holders would be like, what the fuck, right? But then they sold only to their holders, and then the holders are like, what the fuck, because they got boned, right?
So at least
like everybody
hurt the public.
Yeah, in a way. But like I think, you know, I was talking with the whale about this, like even 10 million out the ecosystem right now would have been a little bit tough for everyone, but 40 million like nuked us, dude. Like it, you could see how every project was affected by that. So if I was CEO, I would probably have, first of all, dropped a totally different collection. Like, I don't know why you would drop the same art and then distribute the rare traits and make them common, because like literally if somebody's spending hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to get their hands on a specific trait, you don't give that trait to, you know, 1,000 more people, you know, like that. Just visually, you know what I really learned from the Azuki thing is the art does matter. Like, it's not just like, oh, they dropped a collection. It's like, what does the art mean to people? Like, what kind of expectations does it create? And how does that affect speculation? Because if you just want a cheap entry point in Azuki and look cool, you're overjoyed, because now you can get a grail for like one ETH, right? And then, but if you're a whale and you accumulated a lot and you spend a bunch of money and those things matter to you, then you're probably really unhappy. So I think their miscalculation was probably the type of art they dropped. I think there is a chance that even with the liquidity shock and stuff, if the art was like super original, very, very different, didn't create confusion in the market, all that stuff, it could have maybe had a better reception. So if I was CEO of Azuki, I would actually... I mean, look, this is going to be a hot take, so no disrespect to, you know, that community, since we have so many people in the community who also are ONI holders that we love. If I was CEO, though, I would have taken it a little slower, had more of a first principles approach of, like, storytelling. Like, because I know, like, another criticism was, like, they delivered this amazing trailer, and then, like, the collection that they dropped seemed to have very little connection to it, and when people asked for like a connection, there was like no explanation, right? And so like why is this super badass tiger looking dude and then that guy's not in the collection somewhere, right? Like,
it was weird timing too, because all of these anime projects that are playing off this narrative and launching now, it all happened within a week. Ether Captains, Azuki.
Yeah,
and it was like all of them got it wrong in their own way.
You know, okay, so it's funny you say that. This is why it is not a criticism to Azuki. I'm just saying what I would do differently as a CEO is I would actually go back to the beginning, look at it from first principles in terms of storytelling, and say, okay, like if this was an actual anime, what kind of world would this be, right? Like, how can we make sure that the collection makes sense for the world? Because, like, to be honest, when I look at the original collection for Azuki, it's quite obvious that they optimize it for community building and status versus like storytelling, right? Because sometimes I'll pull up a collection and I'll just stare at the collection and look at all the traits, because it's almost like you can see the soul of the intention behind it. Because like as a, you know, founder or a, you know, operator myself, like I can look at something and know like, okay, what type of conversations was this team probably having for this trait to appear, you know what I mean? And it's like, and the way I realized this is I was looking at ONI Force's collection. I was just literally I'll just scroll through and look at the art, and then one day it hit me. I was like, wait a second, if we want to make an anime, every single trait needs to make sense logically in this world. Like in this world, why is there like 500 people with a kitsune mask, 500 people with like a tengu mask? Like, are they a clan? Like, how do they choose the mask? Does the mask choose them? Like, does it like represent their personality? You know, like you need like logic behind it. You know what I mean? Storytelling logic.
Yeah. And that totally like is spot on with what I see coming out of ONI Force. Like you can feel that with ONI is like, you guys have such a emphasis on storytelling, and you're one of those, you know, select few that I think really place it and highlight it. How do you balance telling the story from like a community originating that like that lore and the core team? Because one of the really cool things about Bored Ape is that they've allowed some of their community to tell the story. Like, I understand like the main story is being told by Yuga, but it feels like the community is also taking that responsibility and saying, we're creating all these different type of things. How do you balance the community piece and your guys's creation of that lore?
That's a great question. I mean, that's literally the central thing that we had to focus on is, first of all, I think Bored Apes Yuga has the greatest decentralized brand building experiment in like the history of mankind. Like, you've never seen this happen before. That's why I love Bored Apes. I love the culture, the community. I think they're amazing. I think Yuga has had the right balance of, like you said, like allowing community members to contribute. And then like when they see something that works, they'll like kind of bring it into what they're working on, which is like genius. And I think we're taking that to the next step, which is why, for instance, we created the franchise model, where the way we imagine it now is like, if you own a PFP, an Oni PFP, you're now essentially buying the right to do business with us. So if you want to start a coffee company or you want to start your own comic book series, like, not only are we going to say yes, go off and do it, but if you want help, like, we'll do it. Like, we'll give you insight to the lore. We'll help you, like, you know, with marketing assets or resources or distribution, and really try to have like a centralized support network or infrastructure that is for a decentralized purpose, if that makes sense, you know. So it's really just iterating a little bit more on what Yuga is doing. It's kind of like the way I would pitch is like, if LucasArts decided to help fund and support fan fictions, right? So it's like, because especially since we're so story-based, I realized from the community very quickly, it's like, you don't want to spend time and money developing a story that might not fit in canon, right? Like, you want it to be as close to what is going to come out as possible. So the way we've been balancing it is incorporating community members who are super active into actually giving us feedback on our lore and our canon and asking questions and like helping us like poke holes in it and develop stuff. And then when they want to develop their own things, we're going to be having like our, like, we're literally right now working on like our own Bible, our own kind of version of a Wikipedia, where it's like all these questions you might have, like, we'll be able to answer them for you and then provide support.
Do you have a main character of Oni? Like, Curtis is widely known. I think Blue the Coda is widely known. Bored Apes, like, other collections have a little bit of that. Is there a main character yet in Oni?
I would say not yet. I think that's the whole point. Like, we're basically, what we're launching in our first two comic book series is a, you know, a team book, which is essentially like our X-Men with seven main characters. So I think those will be like key characters. And then there's Oni Hunter X, which is kind of like our Wolverine type, which he is kind of our main character right now, where it's actually really cool. The community actually developed that character. So we actually went through like a process for 3 or 4 months where every week we're meeting up and actually working on the lore and like designing what the backstory of that character was, what his motivations were, all those key stuff before we allowed a writer to kind of take that on and turn it into a comic book series. But to me, that's like the character we're going to be promoting a lot because of the fact that the community like literally like built him, you know, and we just facilitated that.
Comic-Con San Diego, was able to see that you guys released that. That would be a great thing to dive into. And then any other, I guess, upcoming pieces that Oni Force is really diving into?
Sure, yeah. I mean, Comic-Con is huge for us because we were actually the first Web3 project to premiere at San Diego Comic-Con. And now we're the first project to go back to actually have a preview of the comic books that are eventually going to be distributed worldwide in comic book stores and bookstores around the world. So we are actually going to be the first and only Web3 project with worldwide distribution in retail stores for our stories, which, you know, if you look at the Pudgy Play with toys, it's like we're doing the same thing in the comic book world. And so obviously going back to Comic-Con is a huge moment for us. And just for the community, I think it's a great validation because it's like we are now presenting a character that the community helped build together, and they actually get to share in that like kind of winning moment. And so for us, I think it'll be a moment of history. We have a really big announcement that's coming along with it. And yeah, so it's a good feeling, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Two questions based on that. One, do you get any like weird looks at Comic-Con when you, you know, kind of talk about Web3 and that piece? And then I guess, how does the distribution work within those comic books? Are you adding additional utility for holders potentially, or how does that supply look what you're distributing out. I'm not familiar with comic book releases, so I don't know what looks,
looks right. So basically, I mean, first of all, it is a tricky, that's a very astute observation, because the unfortunately, a lot of communities that should love NFTs, like, because of the bad press, like, are against them, and gaming is one, comic books are another. So really, the way we're positioning it is, if anybody, or for the art and the storytelling, we think it's awesome. Like, anybody should love it. So we're just leading with that, but we're not going to hide the fact that we're an NFT project. I think, though, if somebody who's really against NFTs wants to know what we're about, I would say that we started off as a company that raised money through NFTs, and NFTs are like a really big part of what we're doing, but we're now growing way beyond that into being like a legitimate technology platform that, you know, creates anime IP and stuff. So, so I haven't been to Comic-Con representing Oniforce since, you know, or at any point, but I think, so I haven't had any of the conversations yet, but just from me going to cons, I know it's a very difficult conversation in 2022 or 2021, when it was still like things were great. I went to a convention and I asked this really famous like comic book artist, I was like, yo, what do you think about NFTs? And he looks at me and goes like, they're fucking stupid. And I was like, okay. I was like, conversation over.
Doesn't it suck when like the people that you think will be super progressive just because they've been creative in their own industry, like, have no capacity to think about NFTs in any other way?
Yeah, it is the bad press, and also a lot of it's deserved, though. I mean, look how much liquidity has been sucked out by people with like terrible intentions. I mean, let's be real, there's almost no other industry aside from crime where like so many people are dubious in what they've done and how they do it. Like, could you imagine if you went to a neighborhood and every restaurant that was on the block, well, we might spit on your food. There might be cockroaches in here. Like, you don't know. There's no standards. Like, we just do whatever the fuck we want. Like, that's not real food. Like, you know, like people wouldn't eat there, you know. But somehow with NFTs, like, we just kept pouring in more millions and millions. So I think we have a ways to go. And part of our job is to actually be a positive example of what NFTs can be, which again is trying to impact people's lives with meaningful storytelling and meaningful characters. You know, in terms of the distribution, I think obviously we have to provide utility to holders. One idea I've had for the longest time, which I think we're probably going to do, is when we do a drop, like a, let's say an issue comes out, before it goes to retail, we'll probably give the first printing rights to the holders. So that way, for instance, like, you know, first printings matter, right? Like, they're worth more usually. And then whenever a comic is popular, they keep reprinting them, and you'll find like up to fifth printings and more in stores. And the value obviously drops each time. Item. So there could be nothing more valuable than giving someone like the first printing of a first comic book, right? Like, if you had the first printing of the first Superman comic, you're literally like a millionaire, you know what I mean? And so, like, the idea I had to provide utility that I think our holders would like is, like, when we do a drop, we have an open mint where it's, like, super cheap, right? And they buy the NFTs that represent, and then the community sets the actual first print run. So if only 1,000 copies are ordered, like, let's say you want to order 10 copies yourself, and then I order 50 copies, and then what happens is, like, we set the initial print run, which also affects the value. Right. And then the cool part is, like, as a holder, we could combine a drop shipping to do is hold on to the NFT. We're now giving you like reseller privileges. So you could go turn around and sell that NFT later. And then whoever burns it will redeem it for a physical copy. But we could just hold the stock for you. So you're not getting like 50 comics shipped to you, and then you got to mail it to someone. You know, we could just take a piece of it for those services, like, which would make the NFT more valuable the longer you hold it, like a one-to-one. But it's also deflationary in the sense that every time you redeem a comic, you're burning an NFT. So I think that would be one cool mechanic that we could do to provide like really good utility for holders. Aside from, like, in the future, we'll have holders include their IP in there, and they could get royalties and, you know, there's advertising space with sponsors in the comics, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I have you for a couple minutes, and I want to get this last couple questions in. And the Origin Marketplace is interesting to me because I think you can tell a little bit about the soul of a project too. You were mentioning this on like looking at the art, but really if the project is attempting to have, I guess, the trading or the collecting go through something that is maybe something more creative focused or more collector focused than Blur, you can see a little bit of the way that they think about these things. So give me your take on Origin Marketplace, and I'd love your take on, you know, Blur as well. I know that's kind of a over talked about subject, but I love it.
Yeah, it's a huge factor. Origin, first of all, they've always been a champion for artists and creators. They've done many big drops with individual artists and been successful in the past. They came to me and they were like, hey, we want to provide more resources to your holders so that they could get more perks. So the idea is that, you know, we could do a marketplace where we actually provide prizes, as opposed to Blur. It's like very beholden to what they decide to give you. So Origin basically is like, decided to take our existing marketplace, add Blur-like functions where we're tracking points and then rewarding people for their trading behavior, but we're rewarding them with prizes that we think our community would like. So to keep our community more engaged, they will have the same, they pay the same royalty. It's only 0.5%, but they get perks that if you're actual fan of Oni, like you would love these perks more than some random ambiguous thing. And so we love what it means for us. It means that as we keep developing cool prizes that our community will love, and it doesn't really change like what they need to do. They just need to decide to use us instead of Blur. And then in terms of Blur, honestly, I don't have a good take on it yet, because I hear people think it's terrible for the market, and then people who think it's good for the market. And unfortunately, I'm not enough of a trader to like, be able to say for sure. It's obvious they have impacted floor price and then created volatility in floor price that maybe wouldn't have existed in the same way. Some people also say, though, that it incentivized people to even trade. Like, there would probably be less volume overall, maybe. But also, if you're only paying 0.5%, I don't know. I mean, look, I always expected the royalties to go down to zero, just because that's how like markets work. If you give a trader the option to not pay a percentage, then they're not going to pay it. So I don't even blame Blur for that. They're not even the first to do that, actually. So I'm a little neutral, to be honest. I'm waiting to see what happens. Yeah. I think it was Looks Rare, but that marketplaces were flirting with 0%. I knew we were cooked. Like that's just inevitable, you know.
Yeah, listen, I know we're dealing with some laggy issues, so apologies for that. But Star-Lord, you've been awesome throughout this entire discussion, man. I appreciate you coming in and dropping all the information related to Oni Force and your takes on the market and kind of that history of the project. So it's been a great convo. Can I squeeze any last bit of alpha out of you before you head on to whatever inevitable Twitter spaces you're at next?
So we're expecting to make a really big announcement between July 22nd and 24th at Comic-Con. It's really big for us because it's a move forward in terms of our exposure as an IP in the Web2 world. And so definitely look forward to that. Plus, we're going to be announcing new kind of prizes and perks that we're going to be giving to the community. So I think it's going to be a really good time.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you stopping by again. Hopefully, we can get you on the channel relatively shortly here, maybe in August. Yeah. It'd be great to talk to you again.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a great interviewer. Ask great questions. I would love to be on anytime. So we could do something in August as well.
Yeah, Gifted is making sure that I load up on Oni Force as well. So know that he has y'all's back trying to get me to load up on the bags.
Oh, yeah, we love that guy. I mean, I met him in person finally in L.A., and he was such a great, charming dude, and appreciate what he does for this. We're on it.
Awesome, man. All right, thanks again. Star-Lordy, you've been amazing. CEO of OniForce. Look forward to what you guys are building out for the NFT space, man. You guys are doing a fantastic job.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. I really appreciate you.